Hey, everyone. I want to welcome you to this special episode of the HX Podcast. Today, we're going to do something a little bit different. First off, many of you know me from my previous podcast, which was the Hard Money Million Dollar Podcast with my good friends Matt Sacombe and Gabe Marshank. And in that podcast, you know, we had a strategy. We were looking to take $10,000 and turn it into $1 million, no matter what we would do, as long as it was legal, mind you. So we looked at any asset class, we looked at any opportunity, et cetera. For the HX podcast, we've been a lot more focused on bonds and crypto. But, you know, I know that a lot of our audience is looking at a lot of different asset classes. And if you're like me, you have an interest in many other things. And there's a lot of ways to make money and that are very valid and that can add uncorrelated returns to your portfolio. So today, I'm thrilled to welcome back a guest that had joined us on the Hard Money Podcast, a gentleman named Nick Andrews, Boston Card Hunter on Instagram, and of the podcast Sports Card Madness. First off, Nick, how you doing, man? How you been?
I am good, Enrique. It's funny, I remember being on your other pod. And I have a story I can share with the audience where I actually turned 10,000 into 300,000 just okay. From sports cards. So it's pretty cool. But yeah, I've been great. I'm happy to be on.
Nice. Absolutely. Well, good. We appreciate it. And so what I want to do here, we're going to launch into this in a second. But again, I want to give some context here. You know, I'm 51 years old. I got involved in the stock market when I was 16. But my first introduction to investing assets, portfolios, was baseball cards and comic books. You know, I literally went out, and this was before Excel. I would take on, it was on an Amiga, whatever a word processor they had, and I would chronicle my baseball cards and comic books and write them down. And I was a little bit more of a comic book guy, although then I became more of a card guy. I would wait until the Overstreet price guide monthly would come out, and I would go in and mark up the prices and my portfolio and calculate monthly return. I was doing this shit when I was like 11, 12 years old, which means that I had a lot of other bad shit going on in my life, trauma that wanted me to take control. But I think that I'm probably a lot like a lot of our audience in that, you know, a lot of our first experience with assets, portfolios, et cetera, was with cards, comic books, other collectibles. So before we get started, we're both card geeks, although you're like a level 11 card geek. And I'm like a level 3 card geek. There's going to be a lot of terminology in here that a lot of people don't understand. You know, one of them is, and let me just explain this, in collectibles, there's been the creation of grading services. These go out and they take a collectible, a comic book, a baseball card, a coin, and they have an objective observer. They have standards where you submit that to them. And then they tell you this is and the big one in cards is PSA. What does PSA stand for again, Nick?
That's Professional Sports Authority. I don't even know anymore. It's owned by Collectors okay. Universe. And just think of it as a grading authority. And don't worry about the acronym. They're just like the referee or the boss of the grading world.
And I think it's important to talk about this because it was a huge change in the market. It used to be if I had a card and you had a card, I'd say mint, you'd say near mint, and the difference in price between the two was 50%. And then, like, you know, sure. There'd be all these arguments, right? And it's like, I'd send you a card, you'd be like, that wasn't mint, that was near mint, blah, blah, blah. PSA kind of took mm-hmm. that away and said, we decide what's mint, near mint, and as long as they maintain authority and credibility. And what happened was the prices went up. I mean, they started by going up fivefold. Eventually, they went up 1,000-fold. But the fungibility, the ability to trade, went up tremendously. And I'll give a stock market example. The stock market has rules. Every share has to be certified and do something. But what happens if I said, okay, I own a share of IBM, but it's written on the back of this piece of paper with a guy from IBM, and you said, oh, I've got a share written by another guy, and we went to go trade those shares of IBM. Who the fuck knows whether they're really shares of IBM? what happened in the collectibles world is these companies stepped in and created an authority, a system, et cetera, so that you could have, you know, agreement on grading, agreement on, you know, what was what, and that created liquidity and value, et cetera. So I'm going over to my computer. I do want to know, I want the answer here. What does PSA stand for?
PSA
stands for, well, apparently it stands for prostate specific antigen, but
I think it's professional sports authentication.
It is. Yeah. Professional sports authenticator, PSA. So now we know. Okay.
Boom.
So let's jump into the rest of the conversation here. Walk us through a little bit of your journey. How did you get involved in cards? You know, what your sort of history is. And then let's go up through 2020, and then I want to pick up the story there, and I want to chime in a little bit. So, give us the story.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so like you and probably like a lot of your listeners, so I'm 43, a little bit younger, but I collected cards in the 80s, and it was super fun, something to do with my dad. You know, I'd write to players on the teams, get autographs, and you know, I didn't think much of it through college and, you know, life just got busy, right? And then, you know, I was just having one of those like annual meetings with my financial advisor and, you know, he manages my money and we just talk through where the money is. It's, you know, stocks, bonds, real estate, private equity. And we're just trying to think of other asset classes to diversify a little bit. And we were talking about collectibles. And I told him, I'm like, I hate art. I don't really want art on my walls and I don't really care about it. I like vinyl, but that's not really going to do it. But I love sports cards, right? And so he's like, that kind of fits the collectibles class. And I started getting into it, going down the rabbit hole of figuring out what's valuable, what's not, what's high end, what's low end.
Can I ask one real quick question? What year was this that you had this conversation with the financial advisor?
It's crazy, man. It's like 2019. My spidey sense was going off or something.
Got it.
It was very timely. And, you know, I just started dabbling in like, you know, I watch the Celtics. I collect Celtics stuff. You know, we're talking $200, $300 cards. Just having fun with your kid, right? And then it started to get serious. And I really started to think through, okay, should I get a Michael Jordan rookie for five figures, that type of thing, and start to think about how to place my bets. And the whole thing got kicked off by a scam, really.
Okay.
I was going to do a trade with somebody off of eBay. They were going to trade me a PSA 7 Michael Jordan card, which is, I don't know, $5,000 or $6,000. I was going to trade them a Kareem rookie, which is about the same price. The Jordan card that I got ended up being fake.
Okay.
And the guy made good on it, and he gave me, as a replacement, again, this is 2019, 2020.
Yeah.
He gave me a full 1986 Fleer set just to mess with. So just the raw cards, not in a set.
Yeah.
And then I had a light bulb in my head, and I talked to my financial advisor and said, you know what? I'm going to get every single one of these autographed for the entire set.
Okay.
And I bet that's going to be worth a bonkers amount of money. And so that's where we left it. And he's like, all right, I bless this idea.
Can I ask you a couple quick questions? Because I had once an instance where I bought a 68 Mantle, which was a PSA 8 or 9. And that was the last Mantle card. And three or four, or actually it might have been 7, 8 years later, because I started buying my PSA cards in like 2002, 2003, which I'll tell you actually ended up being in some ways a mistake because I was working on PSA 9, PSA 10 Yankee sets. But at the time, there were a bunch of cards where there was like one or two or three of like, you know, some 1977 random Yankee PSA 10. So I was paying $200, $300. Now there's 100 of them and they're worth like $10. But I had the 68 Mantle card that I had for years. And one day I get an email from PSA and it says, there's been a challenge to the legitimacy of your card. And I'm like, I forget the verbiage. I'm like, well, what does that mean? And they said, well, someone else claims they have the card and you have it in your set registry. So we went back and forth and they're like, we need you. We're going to revoke your registration unless you send us the card. And I'm like, really? Like, you got to be fucking kidding me. But I went ahead and I sent them the card. And it turns out someone had gone, bought some other PSA card, cracked the slab, took a 68, shaved it so that it looked perfect, went into a Kinko's, printed their own like label, the whole thing, put it in the slab, and then sold it to me for like $2,000 or whatever it was, what it was going for at the time. So I still have the card, by the way. I mean, it's, wow. I mean, the card's worth a couple $100s. I think it's, you know, whatever. It's an altered, you know, card yeah. now. But what was wrong with the Jordan rookie that you had?
Oh, it was a fake card, a fake slab, a fake label. Okay. The label was a Garbage Pail Kids label, I think, on the inside. They used an old label, so the whole thing was finagled. I was a noob, you know. It was a painful lesson, but a lesson that kind of sparked things.
Well, the guy who sold it to you, apparently, he didn't know either if he made good on it.
No, right? He got it from a friend who he said, quote, "I'm not surprised." He gave me kind of his best asset to replace it, and, you know, we were all good.
Okay, cool. And was the 86 set, and I'm sorry, there's some people listening to this who probably don't know anything about cars, but there's some who really do. Did the 86 set, those used to come in a box, right?
Signed one. You might not be able to see it, but I've got a signed one on my my desk over there by Kareem and Bird and Magic. But yeah, it's this box. You can get them for about $10.
They're
about $125,000 now. Box. The packs alone are $3,000.
Did he send you an 86 box, or he just sent you the individual cards?
Just a set. So, like, okay, you know, there's 133 cards. Yep. He sent me those cards. And, you know, it's probably $2,000 or $3,000. We kind of split the difference. We both got screwed. So,
got it. Okay. So let's go back through this. So 2019, your spidey sense is going off. You like cards. You start dabbling, things like that. I'm going to say the last time we spoke was probably in late 21, 22. I want you to walk us through the end of 21, the beginning of 22, kind of what your journey is, what you were doing, what was going on, and then I want to pick it up there, and I want to give you what I think has happened, and then I want to hear what really happened.
Sure. Yeah, I was just watching the madness of the modern card market and just thinking it was all just insane. You know, like the 73 different versions of rookies and colors and stripes and all of that. I immediately decided I only wanted to mess with vintage. I only wanted to mess with signed vintage because it's scarce. I did a calculation in my head and said, if I pull off this autograph set, there's probably only about 25 in the world that can exist. And how many Picassos are there? How many Rembrandts are there?
Yep.
You know, if 25 of an asset like this, I mean, it's the most iconic card year there is.
How many of those guys were dead when you went to go do the set, just out of curiosity?
18. So you got to buy those, right?
Okay.
Unless you got a gypsy and an Ouija board, you're buying those cards.
Yeah.
But surprisingly, I got about half for free. So I was bored with my son, and there's a lot of places you can go to look up addresses of players and so on and so on. And we'd write to them, man. And they'd send them the cards, send it right back. Sometimes you stick $10 in there. And we really started to compile it fast.
People forget, and I wonder how many, you know, newer car collectors, that was done for decades and decades. Oh, yeah. It was the norm. I've seen videos of, and I don't want to say it was Joe DiMaggio because he was kind of a D, so I'm not sure he would have done it, but I've seen videos of, like, these guys, they would just get cards, and it was like, okay, here's the 100 cards. Like, I'm just going to sign these cards, and kids loved it and all that.
Yeah, it's wild. So we got, like, half that way. Another 30% are your Larry Birds, your Magics, your Kareems. You pay them a couple $100, they sign the card through signings or whatever. The deceased players just had to network and get them, harder than you think.
Yep.
There's a couple weird cards where, like, there's somebody who it's not his picture, so he hates it, and he just refuses to sign the damn card. I sent him $500 check, and he signed the card. Okay. So, like, just stuff like that. And then I finished it off with MJ at auction summer of, it's like 21, something like that.
Okay.
Finished the set. And then I was proud of what I was doing because the market was going nuts for you know, like, just classic bubble behavior. And I just wasn't having any part of it. So I wanted this set that's actually, it's like a museum piece almost.
Okay.
And I mean, at the end of the day, I talked to Christie's and they said the set's probably worth $300,000 to $500,000.
Wow.
It's all PSA slabbed. I'm not going to sell it. It's going to my son. It's kind of something fun we did together.
He can sell
it for his first house or something,
couple other questions. Yeah. How much did you probably have invested in the set?
This is wild, dude. So I'm going to say I probably spent $40,000 or $50,000 all in with grading. Okay. Yeah. However, I'm probably net zero in terms of selling duplicates.
Got it.
So I hit that error card guy back up, get a few more cards signed, sell them for $3,000 a piece, just flip and flip. And then I found an MJ raw. You know, and so basically, I'd say $0 to $10,000 into this thing that's worth $300 to $500.
That's fantastic. And when you got them slabbed, what's the average grade on the set?
I'm going to say it's a 7 for the card. Okay. You know, okay. The autos are probably about the same.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. It's almost inconsequential because there's only 3 of these that I know of in the world right now that are slabbed. So I feel pretty good about it, but I'm always upgrading, especially the living players. They do signings. I'm like, upgrade the card. Just keep going.
Right.
And then I even got the referees from that season. I got them all to sign checklists. Nice. So then bored. I started another set.
Let's go back to that. When you say you're always upgrading, is that you go and find a PSA 9 of something you had in a 7 and then have them autograph the 9?
I'll actually, let's say the card's like a 5 or something like that.
Okay.
And Bill Laimbeer, he's about to do his first signing in 10 years in a couple weeks.
Okay.
I've got his card, it's like a 5. So I cracked out an 8 and I'll send that to the signing and hope for a nice little upgrade.
Got it. And then this is part I don't know because I don't know the other card. You have them sign the physical card?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it. Okay, yeah. Fascinating. So what was the next set that you focused on?
The 1969 Tops, the Tall Boys.
The late '60s. Yeah,
that's tough. I'm 5 away on that one. That's probably $500,000. When I pull that off, it's taken me a lot longer. I did 86 in like 4 months. This is going to take me it's been a year.
So how many cards are in the set?
99. And it's the big, it's like Kareem and Wilt and Jerry West. Yeah, whole.
No, I'm a Suns collector. And so I have I think I've got the full Suns set in PSA 8 or 9, not autographed. But yeah, I mean, imagine with that one, you're going to run into the issue with a couple guys that are deceased and hard. Yeah,
half of them are gone.
Yeah. Got it. So let's take a step back. So you kind of stepped into it in 2019. I don't want to say lucked into, but you happened into this 86 kind of set situation. But what were you doing in the card market? So this is a hobby for you, or that part is a hobby. Okay. And obviously a very lucrative one. But I want to come back to that in a second because I think it's fucking fascinating. Then what did you do during 2021, 22? Because I recalled us talking and you were actively trading cards. Like you were going out, buying in the open market, flipping them. Walk us through sort of what your methodology was, what you were doing, you know, to the extent you're comfortable. Give us some numbers so we can understand it.
Yeah. So there was part of me that was just acquiring assets, right? So like a Pistol Pete Maravich rookie card, there's only 9 signed in the world. Got one of those, right? And there's several cards like that I just acquired, rare vintage and rare vintage signed cards. And then, yes, there was so much arbitrage out there. One really great arbitrage situation was I just made friends with Kareem's team through email. And I said, hey, will he sign his first name on the card for me too? And I was like the first person they did that to. I had him sign like 8 of his rookie cards with his full name. Okay. And I 5X'd every single one of those cards.
You're saying because he only signed his first name usually and you got him to sign
up until
his full
a couple
name.
Years ago, he only signed Abdul-Jabbar.
Okay.
And then I kind of opened the floodgates. Now he's doing it for everybody.
Right, but I had
a little moment there, a little window, like all arbitrage situations are. You've got like this little window until it shuts. It's great.
Yeah. Got it.
So he's doing stuff like that. And it was fun.
Okay. So it sounds like you were focused on vintage. You were focused on autographed in particular, and then basically acquiring cards, vintage cards that you felt you then could, that were either autographed already or that you then could get autographed, and then, you know, basically reposting those into the market. Is that the core of the strategy?
Yeah, exactly.
Got it.
I mean, there's other great things too. There's a triple rookie. It's 1980. It's got Dr. J, Magic, and Larry Bird on it. They're all living.
I had one.
Yeah.
They
all sign. And the cost to put it together is only about half of what you can sell it for if you maintain the grade of the card.
Okay.
So, I mean, I did that for my personal collection, but people don't think of this stuff. They just think of all the modern weird card stuff out there that's selling for, you know, all this crazy money. But if you just quietly do something that's scarce, it'll pay off in the long run. You know?
No, I love the scarcity idea. I mean, I think it's a big one. So for the whole card trading period, let's call it the COVID period. I'm going to say COVID period starts March of 2020. And I'm going to say, this is fucking arbitrary. I don't know where I'm coming with it. It ends the end of 21, okay? Which I'm kind of putting it along with the stock market too, right? You know, as the stock market shit itself for the first time at the beginning of January of 22. So we're going to say the COVID period is March of 20 to 21. Couple questions. How much of your time, I'll just throw them all out there and you can answer that. How much of your time were you focused on cards? You know, what do you think your total invested was, your P&L? And then how much of it was focused on this autograph strategy versus other strategies? And what were some of those other strategies? There's all four questions.
Yeah. There. So it's interesting. I mean, I'm a semi-retired entrepreneur. I still invest in companies and an angel investor and stuff. So I had some time on my hands. Most of what I do is virtual anyway. With my son and my family, like, you know, during COVID. So we're cooped up. And I don't know, man, I probably spent 20% of my time on cards, okay. You know, besides Netflix and like all the other crap we were doing, working out. So, you know, I was having fun. It was a real hobby, right? And then putting together that set was a big chunk of that 20%.
Okay.
And then, you know, I think if we take a big zoom out on the P&L, I probably spent, we'll say, like I said, on this set, I spent 50 to 70 to put this set together.
Okay.
I probably spent another 30 grand on car. We'll call it 100 grand. Flipping, moving, creating value. That was probably worth, you know, I guess 400, you know, wow. If you count the set plus the other stuff.
Yeah.
So we're talking 4X, 4.5X. This is before the 69 set. Obviously that yep. came a little later.
Yeah.
So I felt pretty good about that, but it's unrealized, right? It's not like I haven't cashed it out. The set's sitting there for, you know, the lower tax rate of my son in the future.
Well, I don't mind that though, because that's like, you know, it's one thing when you're sitting on an unrealized gain on like a bunch of Juan Soto cards or something like that.
Yeah.
It's another when you're sitting on an unrealized gain on an 86 set. And you say, okay, so you spent 20% of your time across 18 months, deployed 100K, and maybe turned it into a $500,000 or something like that. Is that fair?
Yeah, yeah. And okay. Remember, I had a lot of fun doing it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, we're gonna, I would have done it for free.
We're going to come back to that because I think it's important. So 2022 happens, okay? And, you know, and just so you
card
know,
shit
like,
the bed.
Everything shits the bed. So, but I guess for your card strategy.
The tale of two stories.
I was going to say something, but for your card strategy, it sounds like you were mostly buying assets, you were upgrading them, you were keeping the majority of them for the long term, but then sort of on the side, opportunistically flipping them to help generate, you know, or just because you had the opportunity, not to generate income, but to kind of subsidize everything else. So you exactly. weren't necessarily involved in an income generation strategy. It happened to generate some income, but you kind of just plowed it all back in. So that brings us to January 2022. We're 2 years later now. What's happened to the card market since? And actually, I'm going to take a step back. I look at it from the outside. I wasn't trading cards at the time because I just had too much stuff going on. But I just saw all this crazy shit going off, you know, and especially we're not even talking about NFTs and, you know, we can touch on that subject a little bit later on. But it felt to me that like the card market, you know, it's like what happens a lot with collectibles. The best of the best of the best of the best kind of continued to stay there. They stopped going up as much, but they were still fairly fungible. And if you wanted to move a PSA 10 Fleer, you know, Jordan card, you probably could move it. And you probably could move it near what it went out at the top or, you know, plus or minus 10, 15%. Then below that, you had to probably take a 20 to 30% haircut, you know, on anything that's kind of goes from A plus to A. A minus, you might even take a 50% haircut, and B plus, you just couldn't even fucking sell it. Like the liquidity just, you know, dropped out of the market. So it wasn't even so much that price moved. I mean, price did move for stuff below, but that the volumes went down 90%, you know, kind of thing. I've paid no attention. I just know a lot about markets. What happened from 22 to today?
That's very accurate. You know, I will say what I did is a lot like in real estate where you make money on the buy. Basically, my basis in these cards guarantees a return. You know, I got them for so little, it doesn't matter. So I was kind of safe there. And honestly, also my timeline was different than this market's timeline, so it didn't matter. But you pretty much nailed it. I would say your blue chip, A plus, whatever, B plus and beyond type stuff, that might, like the modern stuff tanked a lot. So your premium stuff okay, maybe 10-20%, something like that. The Jordan PSA 10, believe it or not, got wiped pretty good. I would say that got wiped 2/3.
Okay, wow. That one is like that piece of art that goes from exactly. 10 million to 90 million because some Saudi fucking dude decided he wanted to pay 90 million for it, but there was only one buyer at 90 million. So that one I could see a little bit, but yeah.
And there's one guy that controls most of the market. He has 23 of the PSA 10s, Rick Probstein. He was on our podcast. So, you know, it's got weird market behavior there. But yes, you're right. I would say a lot of the modern cars just lost 9% of their value. Vintage, I don't know, 20% haircut.
Okay.
Signed vintage, almost nothing. Signed vintage might have increased during this period because I think people are like, oh my God, run to safety, right? And it's like, that's safe. They're not printing any more of those.
Okay.
So yeah, you're pretty accurate there.
Okay. So signed vintage, you know, man, I don't even remember what we spoke about 2 years ago. First off, because I got fucking PTSD from a whole bunch of shit. But like, is signed vintage, is it literally just you basically identify a rare card, you probably slabbed, you know, because you want to find something that's got a decent grade. You crack the slab, you get the guy to sign it, you get it regraded and hope that the grade holds. And now you've just got a much more valuable asset. Is that really the...
That's half. The other half is the more daring half where I'm finding old guys with old stuff in old attics. It ain't slabbed. Could have been done by a secretary. Could have been done by the player. Could have been done by a plagiarizer in the 70s. And I'm taking gambles on those. And some of them are not paying off. And I have to convince PSA to slab them.
You say old guys, you're saying old players or just old...
Old dudes, old collectors.
Old collectors.
Old vintage autograph collectors that have shoeboxes of these cards and they don't realize... You know, they did TTM, like through the mail.
Got it. So you're actually finding not old... They're old cards. You're finding autographs. So you're focused on people that have autographed shit.
I mean, if the players are dead, half of them are dead. You have no choice but to find an already autographed card.
Well, and so then are you doing that both with cards and...
like memorabilia?
Memorabilia and pictures.
I'm doing it mostly with... I don't really care so much about the memorabilia part of it. Others do, like bats and jerseys and stuff. Just cards for me, probably because I have OCD and I'm doing these sets. But it's pretty much just like the on card. And the other interesting thing is nobody ever wanted to sign on card back then because they thought it devalued the rookie card.
Yeah.
So there's, again, less supply, right? It's crazy.
Got it. Okay. So it sounds like, and I'm not trying to create competition for you, you know, but like...
Yeah, go ahead.
It sounds like there's still an opportunity that you focus on vintage, you focus on rarity, and then you focus on autographs. And then you kind of go down that path, you know, that you can create some value there. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, one more very quick arbitrage that's probably open for another year and will close for the audience if they're interested. PSA has these old labels. They're called blue flip labels. You can't miss them. Go on eBay. It'll look like this old blue label on top. They never graded the card when it was signed in here. It just says authentic. Card's authentic. It's real. Signature's authentic. That card could be like a 7.
Okay.
So you start eyeballing those and you say, all right, that card's like a 7 card, 10 auto. Resubmit it to PSA. I just did that with a Bill Russell. It was worth $2,000 as is in a blue label. And I got a 3 on the card. This is a 61 card.
Yeah.
And it's a 310 auto. It's worth $5,000. So I made $3,000 out of thin air, just blinking, basically.
Got it. And so that is, I think I remember this. PSA used to do, you could submit a card, not get the card graded, but get the autograph graded, right?
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
You still can, but most people have gamed it in the new labels. The old stuff's still out there, though. Go to the old shows, find your old friends. You can make some money.
And then let me just ask you again, these are things like that I just don't know. Do you screw around with BGC? Do you do anything other than PSA or is it just PSA?
Yeah, you know, Beckett slabs are fine. They've kind of shit the bed a little bit in terms of brand equity and value over the last year. PSA is just skyrocketing and Beckett's sort of just muddling, which is a shame because they kind of started this whole thing with the Beckett price guides and stuff.
Well, they started with the price guides, but they didn't start it with the grading. I mean, my buddies created PSA.
PSA started the grading.
Yeah.
Correct.
Oh, so is there now, because for a while there, it seemed like there was a price parity between BGC and PSA. Like there wasn't a lot of difference, but you're saying now there's more of a premium to PSA?
PSA owns 90% of the market right now.
Got it.
I mean, it's a classic Monopoly, classic Monopoly. And Beckett's just kind of chugging at like 10-15%.
Okay. And there have been a couple other grading outfits that had some legitimacy. Which ones were those?
Yeah, SGC. And guess who just bought them? PSA.
Okay. Got it.
More of a Monopoly. It's an amazing industry. It's ripe for disruption if anybody wants to come in and have fun with it.
Well, I'll tell you, I was thinking about this episode. So we were talking about this the other day. I'm friends with a guy named Van Simmons and David Hall. And Van and David, they're both in their 70s. They are actually the ones who created Collectors Universe, created PSA. They started in coins with, I guess it's PCGS. And I want to get Van on, and we'll do it together because you've got so much more to. We'll do a collab between our two podcasts here. And Van just has stories. I think I was telling you, he's like, you know, what's the Mantle rookie card? Is that 56 or
52, man? That thing's a 52. Beast.
No, he's like, yeah, you know, I bought 10 of those 52s. I paid $800 each for them. I was like, God, I'm getting ripped off. And then, you know, they went to like $3,000 and I sold them all just because I took the money. And it's like, and I'm like, what do you think those graded at? And he goes, I don't know. Sixes to eights, you know. I'm just like, what the fuck?
$10 million card.
It's crazy, you know. But actually, the thing I love about Van is he'll tell that story, and he's very nonchalant about it. He's just like, I mean, first off, it happened in like 1983 or something. So he's not like, you know, he's not like, because I'd be like, oh my God, I had like $700 million worth of cards. I sold for $21,000. He's like, yeah, you know, it just happens. But that would be, you know, he'd be a good guy to get on. Okay, got it.
That would be awesome.
So, today you're focused primarily on, again, the autograph market, identifying rare cards, figuring out how to get rare cards autographed, acquire autographs, you know, a lot of these celebrities. How much time do you think you spend on it today?
Oh, you know, the terms of collecting, probably just a few hours a week. You know, the podcast is a bit different where...
And I want to talk about that next. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I spend more time on that because that's really fun. But in terms of actually collecting the cards, you know, it's a few hours a week. I'm just kind of focusing on the sets and then just some random nostalgic stuff like the Skybox prototype cards from the 90s that I grew up with, getting those signed because they're super rare and people don't realize how rare they are. So not a ton of time, not as much as before.
Okay. Let's talk about the podcast. So tell me about the podcast, when you launched it, what you guys are doing and all that.
Yeah, you know, we were just at the 13th barbecue of last summer. My brother-in-law and I were like, you know what? We geek out on this stuff all the time. Like, let's just hit record. So we started recording. It's called Sports Card Madness. And it's been awesome. It's kind of for noobs. You know, if you don't know anything, you don't know what grading is, cards are, whatever. We have this like Madness University every Tuesday. We give you like a bite-sized chew on it type topics. So you can get educated on how to get into this. But then on Fridays, we do like the main episode. And that could be everything from we had Walt Frazier on to Nat Turner's the CEO of PSA. We'll talk about industry issues, news, stuff like that. We got a great YouTube channel where we actually post some of our collections. I did like a 20-minute how-to on how I built my $300,000 set. It's on there. If you watch that, you can probably do like half of it for free. It's literally a tutorial. So we got stuff like that. And we're just kind of having a blast. So yeah, it hasn't even been a year yet, but it's doing great.
Very cool. Very cool. And I'm guessing that's on Apple, Spotify, you name it. It's out there.
Apple, Spotify, YouTube, Sports Card Madness.
Got it. Okay. So a couple of last questions. Did you ever dabble in NFTs? Did you ever full disclosure, we actually put together a group of us, an NFT acquisition. I won't call it a fund. It was more like a collective. We still have it out there and we're about to give an update. We focused on those original Topps NFTs, which I got to tell you, I still think they're going to have value. Because Topps is still the best brand out there, in my opinion. I think it's going to have more value now that it's part of Fanatics, because they're going to do like what Collectors Universe has been doing with PSA, going out and dominating the market. And when all is said and done, when everyone looks back in 30 years, they're going to say, well, the first real legitimate card NFTs were that series of tops. There's no doubt about it. Like, this is the original. And it's funny because we've seen this happen in physical cards over and over and over, where there was kind of like, oh, that was a flop. No one really cared. And then 30 years later, 20 years later, people go, well, that was a flop, but no one paid attention. And now they're really hard to find. And that was the first one. It kind of sucks.
I've still got them.
You still got them. Okay. Okay. So we're going to go out. Just so you know, and we're going to go out to all the members of the collaborative, and we're going to offer them an opportunity. We've got some cash to distribute, or you can stay in there. I'm very bullish on it. I think that, you know, it's just, there's going to be this hockey stick moment where we're just going to, something's going to happen, and people all of a sudden going to wake up and go, holy shit, these were the first real baseball collectible NFTs, just the same way that Top Shot was there, but in baseball. But yeah, what have you done in NFTs? Do you dabble in NFTs? Tell us a little bit about that.
That was an interesting time to be alive, my friend.
Yeah.
One of the coolest years of human behavior that will ever be studied for centuries. Just, you know, bubble behavior, dead cat bounces, just like everything you can imagine. And I think, you know, so I got into the Topps thing because I actually liked baseball and I liked Topps, and I have like a, you know, a Mookie Betts one that's like the cube that spins around. I thought it looked cool.
Yeah.
I wasn't necessarily doing it for a profit or a flip on those cards. I know we messed around with the Snex. I mean, that was just awesomeness and a lot of fun with lots of fraud. And that's how you spot a bubble, is all the,
well,
the fraud.
I don't remember. Do you remember that hard money? We actually did the crypto Ponzi's.
Yes,
which I love, which by the way, so apparently, and we'll get Tim Thrush on here at some point. At some point, OpenSea took all of our crypto Ponzi's away, and we don't know why, and they've never explained. They just disappeared. Like, and we're still trying to figure it out. But it was the most appropriately named NFT project ever. And that was the whole fucking point, is it was the crypto Ponzi's. That way we were making point that, you know, but that Mookie Betts card was those three, the cubes, they were called.
Yeah,
and we still have, we still have one of the largest collections of cubes out there. I think we have the third largest collection. We have a full set of cubes for every team. I think we've got 9 of them or something like that. I'm sitting on that shit. I think it's,
I remember you got the Trout Otanis and you like controlled the market on those. It was really fun.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
So what have you done? Are you basically just sitting on some of the stuff that you bought from back then and all that? Or?
Yeah, I don't think, I won't say never. I don't see myself seriously getting into NFTs in the next few years. I'm going to let other slightly more crazy, slightly more smart people figure it out. And then I'll be a laggard on that one. But I'm keeping these, you know, just because they're cool. And I did it with my son. I even have packs I haven't opened still on here. And what the hell? I mean, it's, you know, they're just sitting there. So why not just sit there a little longer?
I even have
the Garbage Pail Kids with the wax redemptions on the back. I bought those up on eBay. I have like 100 of them just for nostalgia. And I'm going to just send them all to PSA and see how many 10s I can get. Like an unscratched wax redemption. Who knows? Maybe wax could rip someday, right? And then like, I've got all this like, it's crazy.
I think if you've got the patience, I think it makes a ton of sense. Well, I'll tell you this, a random story. I'm actually going to take, how old is you have a son and a daughter?
Yeah. Okay. My son's 9, my daughter's 13.
Okay, your son's 9. Okay, so my son's 10. He's recently got crazy into Star Wars stuff. And he also recently got into, on Roblox, some point, and I don't know when, they launched a stock trading game on Roblox. And he watches my podcast. Like, he's fascinated that I have a YouTube channel, first off. I've got he's soon to be 11. I've got a 7 and a 3. And there's some trading game on Roblox, and I'm actually going to get in there with him because I don't know if you and I spoke about this. Like, one of the topics that I
did
like,
not know about that game.
I literally just learned about a week or two ago. With HX, like, look, I do this because I love talking about markets. I love sharing things with people. This can be a very lucrative business. And I really love the idea of taking complex topics, access to great information, and making it available to regular, real people. Another topic that fascinates me, though, is the lack of financial education we give our youth. That, like, and I might have told you this analogy, that sex education 30 years ago, you couldn't talk about anything sex in school, and then people grew up and they didn't know what the hell they were doing. You know, now you can talk about anything sex you want. You talk about blowjobs and like to 9-year-olds, and you know, there's books about it. But if you talk about accounting, or you talk about finance, or you talk about, say, oh, no, you can't ruin their childhood by actually teaching them valuable skills about how to manage their money. So we're going to lean into this. I've been talking to him about maybe doing a series of podcasts. So I'm actually going to start, and we're going to go. I've got a hole down in the basement. I have the whole like thing of 30 boxes of Star Wars toys that I bought when KB Toy went out of business, and they were just selling them for like 99 cents. I don't think the 30 boxes is worth like $3,000, to be honest, like, because those things just didn't have any value. But what I'm going to do is we're going to go and we're going to catalog them, and then we're going to go sell them, you know, to educate, like, you know, I want him to see the process. Have you done this with your son? Or do you like kind of educate him and show him like the trading and the dynamics and all of that
stuff? Yeah, first off, keep me in mind if you got some cool stuff there. I might be down. I'm a Star Wars guy too.
But can we stick on that for a second? The thing with the Star Wars stuff is that, so I got a lot of the 12 inches and things like that. But, you know, when they did the Phantom Menace grouping, they just put out, there have been no Star Wars toys for 15 years. Anything they initially put out sold like crazy, and then they slammed the market. It's the equivalent of like baseball cards in the 90s. They just put out so much stuff, and fucking Jar Jar Binks. Don't get me started. Anyway, so we bought it. It's 99 cents. I don't know. I'm going to price it out and we'll see. I'll give you a first look before we put it. We live in New Milford, Connecticut, which has like the largest summer flea market in the country in all of New England. But I'll give you a first look on all this stuff. But what are you doing with your son?
Yeah, you know, I help him understand collectibles and like, you know, this will be worth something someday. You know, I think he appreciates that and thinks of it as a cool thing. He gets a lot of his content and education from YouTube, and I try to make sure he at least watches something productive, like, you know, Mr. Beast's hacks for getting people's attention, you know, stuff like that, where I want him immersed in this digital world that is probably all that's going to matter, you know, when he's 20, in his 20s. Yeah. So helping him, you know, edit videos and do things like that and learn some of those skills at the age of 9, he'll be ahead of everybody in high school. But in terms of, you know, cards is good. Like, you go to a card show, you learn to talk to human beings, right?
Yeah.
You learn how to, like, use your voice.
It's interesting.
And eye contact. You learn how to negotiate.
Yeah.
You learn setbacks. You learn hurdles. You learn, you know, things like that. So there's a lot of life lessons, you know, and collecting is a dedication type thing. We got one random project, by the way. We're trying to get every U.S. senator to sign a card, and we're like 25% through. Just a little George Washington card. He's writing to him, and he's learning about this stuff.
Is Elizabeth Warren going to sign Pocahontas on it for you?
She hasn't signed. I don't know how politically you want to get on the show, but so Ed Markey signed it, but she hasn't. And I'm in her home state, man. You got to sign that.
No, but it's funny what you said, because I actually, my son, he's been doing coding since he was 5, and I actually just got him signed up. I'm working on getting him a video editing class, you know, because I was like, look, things that coding to me is like just like speaking Spanish in this country. Like, you're going to use it. I don't care what you're going to do. It's going to come up. And then the other thing is, all I know is video editing. It's about, you know, you may never use it your entire life, but that one time it's going to come up. It might be the damn family video or something like that. But so let's go back to this one last thing. Well, I got two things, actually. It sounds like you've taken something that you really love, you really enjoy, you find intellectually invigorating, you figure out a system to do it, and, you know, and you're doing it profitably, and you're certainly not wasting your money. You're probably creating some value. Is that something you would recommend to people if they're willing to do the work and have the interest?
Definitely, especially if they have no diversification beyond traditional markets, maybe a little private equity or something like that.
Yep.
And they're just looking for like a different place to put 2% of their money that's going to just, like you say, it's uncorrelated, right? You're smarter than me with this stuff, but it's going to move differently. And if you're enjoying it and you can probably put a pretty solid bet on it, kind of a no-brainer.
Well, know? I don't, you know, the thing is, I uncorrelated. I struggle with it, right? You know, all risk assets are correlated. Like, when the stock market's doing great, everything's going to do great. I think that what you've done is you've picked – a layer of the asset class, a cohort of the asset class that will be relatively uncorrelated. And I think there's something to be said for scarcity and rarity. So over on this
timeline too.
Yeah. So over on this wall over here, I'm going to tell you something about the tattoo world. So real modern tattooing started about 150 years ago, a little bit in England, a lot in the United States, all these port towns, Virginia, the Carolinas, you know, eventually Long Beach. And the way people got tattooed was you didn't do a custom tattoo where you say, oh, I want this picture, that picture. You were typically drunk and you'd walk into the shop and there'd be something on the wall and you'd be like, I want one of those, the heart that says mom. And it was called Tattoo Flash. And it was original art that was done by the tattooers. They would do it in ink and then they would watercolor it. And there's a handful, 50, 100 tattooers that are the Babe Ruths of tattooing. Sailor Jerry is one that you may have heard of. He had 225 pieces of flash in his Hawaii shop. I've got six of them hanging up on this wall. There's one Sailor Jerry. There's 225 pieces of that art. Six of them are here. There are 100 million people with tattoos. This collection here, which I paid, I don't know, 40 grand for, I think could be worth 40 million at some point. But my point is I think if you take things, there are two points here. Find things that you enjoy, that you can get into, that you get into the details, but then focus on scarcity and rarity, because the people that are losing their shirts are the ones buying, and I like Juan Soto right now because he's playing for my Yankees, but you know, the Juan Soto foil extra premium, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's scarcity because maybe there's 10 of them, but it's not scarcity like buying. Like this guy died in like 1972. You know, it's like, and there are 225 of those.
Those cards, man, they're thousands of one of ones. There's more one of ones than like signed Bill Russell cards every year. It's crazy.
Right. No. So I think it's a great way to educate kids and all that. So two last things. What do you do on the investing side? It sounds like you have a pretty steady, secure portfolio, or what's the strategy?
Yeah, you know, I finally gave up like 5 years ago and just had somebody else manage my money. Somebody who I trust with a good track record, that we're like family. You know, we talk about our families. Like I trust him with my life, like that type of relationship. And he's great. You know, he'll tell me, hey, I'm going to make money off of this or whatever. And, you know, we're just an open book. I know what the fees I'm going to pay. And it's just your traditional, I've worked hard. I've kind of already won the game in terms of my portfolio. Uh-huh. So I don't want to do stupid things with it. So there's a little bit less risk for me. So we ratchet it back a little bit. But yeah, I'm happy with how he's managing it. It's doing great. I won't have as high, you know how it is, right? The highs are muted. The lows are muted.
Yeah.
I run in a tighter band, but it's great. And then I take some of my money and, you know, I gamble with it, right? Like most people should.
HX Research, man, we got some great ideas. You should buy. I think I sent that to you, that nuke idea. Like that one to me is not gambling, and I think you can make 2 to 3 times your money.
I sent that to my brother-in-law and he's like, who the hell is this guy? This newsletter is amazing. This stock has already made 45% since the newsletter came out. Please send me these as much as you can.
Yeah. No, I'm telling you, it's up 45% and it's going up a lot more. It's like, that's one where I even hesitated a little bit, but after I did more of the work. Okay, so I'm fascinated by this. You know, I think people should definitely check out your podcast. I want to do some more collaborations. You know, have you thought about doing, and it's not that much work, it's a very interesting business. It's an addendum to the podcast business. Have you thought about doing a newsletter of some sort where you kind of encapsulize some of the stuff?
Yeah, that could be part of the evolution at some point. Right now, we're just trying to make good episodes and good helpful content for collectors and noobs. And then that will probably evolve into several things.
Okay. Well, we should talk. We can help you set up a newsletter very easily. I'm being serious here. Give us again where to follow you on social and where to find the podcast. Give us all the information one more time.
Sure. So I'm on Instagram as Boston Card Hunter. Pretty easy to find. I'm an open book there. Ask me anything. And the podcast is Sports Card Madness. You can find it on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. YouTube, there's a lot more episodes.
Okay.
Like interesting videos and things like that. And then on Spotify, find Apple. There's episodes every Tuesday and Friday.
Okay, great. Well, look, I want to say another message for my listeners here. We all invest to grow our wealth and make money. But the frank fact is, I think a huge aspect of our desire to be active investors is also education, entertainment, engagement. You know, if you look at all the longevity statistics, the people who live till they're 90, it's because they were engaged, you know. And I always say that the stock market, and I mean this as a positive, is the greatest intellectual competition that's ever been created in the history of mankind. But I think that can be said true of a lot of these asset markets. And so, you know, I think there's a huge value to figuring out uncorrelated assets, ones where you have an interest, ones where you can drive by. I mean, what's better than doing something you love, being highly engaged, educating yourself, and making fucking money? And the one thing I'll add last here with collectibles is you can get your kids in it, into it. So, you know, I think that's a really, really cool thing. And so, like, I love having you on here, Nick. Let's do some more stuff together. And please, everyone, follow Nick, subscribe to his channels, all that stuff. And again, I want to thank everyone for joining us on this different episode of the HX Podcast. We'll be doing more of these in the future. And, you know, wish everyone a great week. Thank you.
Thanks, Enrique.
The HX Podcast is a production of Underground Media, produced by Matt Rocker and Enrique Abeda. Please rate, review, and follow the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can follow on X and YouTube at HX_research and get more information on our newsletters at daily.hxresearch.net. This podcast is for entertainment and informational purposes only and is not a substitute for specific, individualized financial advice. You understand that you are using any and all information at your own risk. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making the final decision.